సహనావత్ సహనౌనక్త్ సహవీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. ఓం పూర్ణమదః పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. శ్రుతిస్మృతిపురాణానాం ఆలయం కర్మాలయం నమామి భగవత్పాదం శంకరం లోకశంకరం శంకరం శంకరాచార్యం కేశవం బాలరాయణం. సూత్రభాష్యకృతౌ వందే భగవంతౌ పునః పునః. ఈశ్వరో గురురాత్మేది మూర్తిభేద విభాగినే వ్యోమవద్వ్యాప్తదేహాయ దక్షిణామూర్తయే నమః. ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవదా నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినా మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవైషిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబత్వామనుసందధామి భగవత్ గీతే భవద్వే. యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణేంద్ర రుద్రమరుతః స్తున్వంతి దివ్యైస్తవైః వేదైః సాంగపదక్రమోపనిషదైః గాయంతి యం సామగాః ధ్యానావస్థితతద్గతేన మనసా పశ్యంతి యం యోగినః యస్యాంతన్న విదుస్సురా సురగణాః దేవాయ తస్మై నమః.
సో వీర్ ఇన్ ది సెవెంత్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ ది భగవద్గీత. దిస్ ఈస్ ది ఫస్ట్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ ది సెకండ్ షట్కర్ సెకండ్ సెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది గీత. గీత as you know consists of 18 chapters and can be looked upon as unfolding this major statement of Mahavakya Tattvamasi, that thou art, or Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. So this simple statement or very short statement reveals the basic reality about our life. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Where Brahman, as you know, is derived from root bruh in the sense of bigness or greatness. So that which is unconditionally big or unconditionally great, which means the biggest or greatest or limitless, that's the meaning of the word Brahman. I am Brahman. I am limitless. I am greatest. I am the big. This is what the Upanishads say. And this is necessary to say, because I am constantly saying something quite contrary to this. And as much as I have a statement to make about myself, or one can say that I constantly keep on making a statement about myself, that I am a limited being. This is a statement that I constantly make about myself. No effort is being made. This is something habitual. I should not say natural, but habitual. It has become a habit on my part to constantly declare myself as a limited being. And therefore, a needy being. I'm limited, I'm needy. And because I'm needy, therefore I'm also dependent for fulfillment of my needs. And because I'm dependent, I'm also helpless. Because I cannot fulfill my needs, I'm dependent upon someone or something else to fulfill my needs. And therefore, I'm at the mercy of everything other than myself to fulfill my need. So this is a story about my life. And all of this happens because I keep on declaring myself as a limited being. And therefore, it is necessary to tell me, or necessary for the scriptures to tell me, that you are limitless. Tattvamasi, you are limitless. And if this becomes my perception also, presently my perception is that I am a limited being. If my perception changes completely and becomes the perception of the scriptures that I am limitless, then it will change the whole thing completely also. If I am limitless, I can no more be needy because there cannot be any need in the limitless. If I am not needy, then I am not dependent also because only a needy person is dependent, not the one who is free from need. If I am not dependent, I cannot be helpless also because I do not depend on anything or anybody for my comfort or my happiness. Then I am free. So this knowledge or this perception of myself brings about freedom, and which is what I am seeking. Therefore, this knowledge is extremely important to us. All kinds of knowledge are there. As the Upanishad says, dve vidye veditavye. There is two forms of knowledge that one should know. Parachaiva aparachaya. Aparavidya, the inferior knowledge, or the knowledge about the inferior things. Parachaya, the knowledge about the superior. Knowledge about the non-self and knowledge about the self. Both this knowledge one should gain. What's the purpose of knowing about the world? Why did Upanishad say that you should know the world also? You should know the known non-self also. Just to recognize that it is limited, it is mithya or unreal. Meaning that the world cannot satisfy my need of being free or of being complete. I should know that. Why should I know that? Because I think that the world can make me free. Again, it is my conclusion for whatever reason that the objects and achievements and accomplishments of the world can make me free. Since this is my perception of the world, therefore Upanishad says that you should know the world in its reality also. Not that the world is bad or wrong, except that it cannot fulfill your needs. That your perception about the world is not right. Your perception that the worldly achievements and accomplishments of objects can give you the freedom or happiness, well, that perception is not right. That's not the purpose of the world. The objects of the world are not designed for that purpose. And therefore, they cannot satisfy that need. Simple as that. That doesn't mean that the world is bad or anything. We should know it for what it is. That it is useful for appeasing hunger, for quenching thirst, for protecting you from heat and cold, and for various other things it is useful and necessary. But that it cannot give me freedom or happiness. So this is what we should know about the world, about the non-self. Then how can I satisfy my need for freedom or happiness from the self? So paracha, that paravidya, the knowledge of self also must be gained. And that is why this knowledge becomes the, both this knowledge in fact becomes the subject matter of Vedanta. Vedanta gives us the knowledge of the world, the creation, as well as about the self. And so I have this perception about myself, and I have perception about the world also. And both these perceptions are wrong, born of ignorance, and therefore this teaching becomes extremely important. And that's the teaching that the scriptures provide, and Bhagavad Gita also provides. And so the teachers explain to us as to how the first six chapters of Gita primarily unfold aham, or I, meaning the self, aham brahmasmi. The next six chapters, from 7 to 12, unfold the nature of Brahman, or Ishwar, or God, which includes also Jagat, or universe, and Asmi, or Tattvamasi, the last six chapters, at least of the 13th, 14th, and 15th chapters. And then later on also the 18th chapter, they unfold the nature of the identity between myself and Brahman, or myself and Ishwara. So 7th chapter then is the first chapter of this, the middle Shatka, the middle six chapters. The subject matter is Ishwara, or God. The first six chapters primarily discuss the nature of the self. The second six chapters discuss the nature of Ishwara, or God. That also is very important in our life. God is very important in our life. Just as the self is important, so also God is important. Because we have perception about the self, and also we have perception about God. We come with these perceptions. Without being educated also, we always have a perception about who I am. We also have a perception about what is God. Even when someone says, I don't believe in God, there is also a perception. It's a perception. Someone says God is in heavens or Vaikuntha or somewhere, there also is a perception. Somebody says God is everywhere, there is also a perception. So, everyone has a perception about God. Unescapable. We, each one of us, has perception about the self, perception about the world, and perception about God. It is nature of our intellect to have these perceptions, to have these conclusions. That is called intellect, which always concludes, which always judges, which always decides. That's why it is explained as adhyavasayatmika antahkarana vrittihi, that mode of the mind where it is the nature to do adhyavasaya, to ascertain, to decide, to judge, to conclude. And therefore the buddhi or intellect will have a conclusion about whatever it is that it comes in contact with. Since I am constantly the object of I always experience myself, therefore the buddhi is going to have conclusions or judgment about I. Since I also constantly interact with the world, therefore, the buddhi has conclusions or opinions or judgment about the world. And we also interact with God, actually, with this unknown factor which seems to decide things. And therefore, the buddhi is going to have conclusions or opinions or judgment about God as well. Jiva, Jagat, and Ishvara. Jiva, the individual self, Jagat, the universe, Ishvara, the ruler, or God. All these three are constantly being experienced by us. And therefore, each one of us has perceptions, or conclusions, or opinions about all these three. And our life is based on these opinions. Whatever I do is based on whatever opinion I have about myself. whatever opinion I have about the world, I interact with, and the opinion I have about God. These three opinions constantly influence my thinking and my actions and my life. Therefore, the right perception or right knowledge about all these three is extremely important to us, to the human being, to other living beings who do not have this kind of intellect which makes judgments, etc. For them, it doesn't seem to be important or not necessary. But for us, it is extremely important. It's necessary. So, how does God also, how the opinion or perception of God also counts all the time? If I believe in existence of God, if I believe that there is God, He is omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, He is a witness of everything. If this is my perception about God, then I will take Him to account in whatever I do, that I, whenever I do something, that I am being watched. There is something, an entity or a principle that makes note of this. And when I do something good, the result will be good. If I do something evil, the result will be evil. If this is how I understand God, then naturally that understanding will reflect itself in whatever I do. If I believe that there is no God, then I need not worry about somebody watching me over, somebody judging me, somebody giving results of my action. There is no such entity. Then also, that also will influence what I do. Then I need not worry about being right, doing good or bad. Whatever I do is okay. I guess one of the reasons in not accepting God is to be able to live a life like that. Because the moment you accept God, then it becomes very difficult. Then your conscience says, well, you cannot do a given thing because it is wrong. Or that I must do something because it is right. But not acceptance of God is very convenient, I think. That I need not worry about what is right or wrong because there is nobody watching. Asatyam apratishthante jagadahuhu anishwaram. Lord Krishna describes the opinion of such people in the 16th chapter. Asatyam, they say that there is no truth in this universe. Everything is false. Apratishthante, there is no pratishtha, there is no dharma, there is no righteousness, there is no Ishvara. Jagadahu anishwaram, there is no Ishvara. Then who created this world? Some people believe that Ishvara created the world. Some people think that is dharma or the karma that creates the world. They don't believe in dharma also, righteousness. They don't believe in Ishvara also. They don't believe in satya or truth also. Aparaspara sambhutam. Nobody has created this world other than karma or passion. That's the only cause of creation of the world. Aparaspara sambhutam. Kimanyat kama hetukam. It is caused by kama, the passion, and is meant for fulfilling your passions also. So that's also a conclusion about the world, about Ishvara, and about one's own self. And so life of a person like that will be dedicated in fulfilling his passions. And since he need not take into account Ishvara or Dharma, therefore everything is right, nothing is wrong. Etam drishtim avastabhya nashtatmanah alpabuddhayah prahuvanti ugrakarmanah kshayaya jagatah ahitah. Etam drishtim avastabhya. Resorting to this perception and conclusion about life, nashtatmanah alpabuddhayah, this people of very small intellect, with perverted intellect, their actions are always for they are always harming the world. That's all. Their actions are always harming the world. Because whenever I violate dharma, whenever I violate values, my actions are going to be violent. They're going to hurt somebody. So this life also is based on perception of Ishvara and about the self and about the world. And people are very righteous, well, their life also is based on their own perception. So understand that ultimately is perception is the key thing, is what decides what my desires are going to be, what my thoughts are going to be, what my actions are going to be, how my life is going to be, is all decided by what perception I have. And therefore, Vedanta addresses this perception. Believing that when the perception changes, everything will change. That a complete transformation can take place in me, or to the extent that my perception changes, the transformation will take place in me. Swamiji, look at these fellows, having listened to Vedanta for so many years, nothing has changed. Some people complain, well, that's what it looks to us. We don't know. But if nothing has changed, that means the perception has not changed. It is possible that in spite of listening to Vedanta, the perception may not, I don't think it would happen, but if somebody thinks that no change has happened, that means that the perception has not changed. I don't believe that can happen. But then, because it's habit of some people to complain like this. Maybe to justify their own not listening to Vedanta. And therefore, to pull the legs of those who are listening to Vedanta. Of course, as Pooja Swamiji says, when this daughter-in-law talked about her mother-in-law, and see, my mother-in-law has been to temple since 35 years and listened to all the kathas and still look at her nature, how she is. Swami would say that, what if she did not do all this? So maybe that's what we may have to say. What if they did not listen to Vedanta, then perhaps? But Vedanta seeks to change our perception. It is yoga that brings about a transformation based on this perception. So this perception translating into life will be called yoga. Brahma Vidyaya Yoga Shastra. That is why Bhagavad Gita teaches us Brahma Vidya, meaning the perception of Brahman or the truth. And Yoga Shastra, how to put that perception into practice, if you may say. So that's the Yoga Shastra. Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is the way of performing karma or our day-to-day actions based on this perception. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkinja jagatyam jagat. Whatever there is in this creation is Ishvara. Yatah pravrtir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam. Ishvara is the one who inspires all the activities and who pervades the universe, who is the self of all. Ishvara is the self of all. And he is the consciousness behind all the activities. So this is the perception of Ishvara. If this is so, then what do we do? Then Lord Krishna says, Svakarmana tam abhyarcha siddhim vindati manava. Svakarmana tam abhyarcha. Worshipping Ishvara suggests that with one's own karma, with one's own duties. Siddhim vindati manavaha. The manava, a human being, attains perfection. So that's the yoga. The first line of the verse tells us what Ishvara is. The second line of the verse tells us what do we do with that knowledge of Ishvara. If Ishvara is the self of all, if Ishvara is one who inspires all the activities, who is the cause of all the activities, aham sarvasya prabhavah mattas sarvam pravartate. I am the source or origin of the whole creation, and it is from me that all the activities are prompted. If this is the nature of Ishvara, then what do we do? Svakarmana tamabhyarcha. Make your life a worship of Ishvara. How do I worship Ishvara? Svakarmana. By your own actions, by your own duties. Siddhim vindati manavaha. In that process, you gain siddhi or perfection. So, Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra. So, Yoga also becomes important. Yoga becomes important as much as Yoga is the process of translating this perception in our life. The process of translating this perception in our life is Yoga. And therefore, Lord Krishna also emphasizes Yoga a lot. A lot of the material of Bhagavad Gita is devoted to teaching Yoga. But is it possible, Swami, that somebody has this perception and doesn't do anything about it? That's not possible. Because the buddhi or the intellect has this preference for truth. But this nature it is to be devoted to what it considers as truth or reality. The buddhi or intellect is always devoted to truth, whatever it considers truth. And that is why Vedanta teaches us what this truth or reality is. So buddhi will be devoted. The devotion is natural to us. We are always devoted. Even intelligent person, intellectual person that a person may be is also devoted. Because intelligence is always devoted to truth. That's the reason why whenever we deliberately violate the truth, there is a sense of guilt. There is a sense of self-condemnation. Because I expect that I should be able to live up to the truth. That is my expectation of myself. I have an expectation of myself that I should be able to live up to the truth, whatever I consider as truth. And therefore, out of compulsion, out of helplessness, not out of choice, a person will never compromise truth out of choice. Whenever I compromise truth, I violate values, is always out of compulsion, out of helplessness. Thus, when out of helplessness or compulsion, whenever I violate values or compromise truths, I don't feel good about myself. I feel that I am not strong enough. I am not courageous enough. Because I expect myself to be able to live a life of truthfulness. Because the intellect has a natural love for truth. Therefore, we are devoted to truth. And whatever is truth-revealing to us, we are going to be devoted to that. And therefore, I think when the intellect understands, when it gains and clarity about what the scriptures teach, it is going to be translated in life. If you follow the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, then the translating will be easy, smooth, because Lord Krishna teaches how to translate that perception in life. When a person struggles it by himself or herself, that could be somewhat difficult. And so then coming back to the 7th chapter of Gita, Tattvamasi, the Tatpada. That means Ishvara. So nature of Ishvara is being unfolded in these 6 chapters from 7th to the 12th. The nature of Tvam or the Self was unfolded in the first 6 chapters. The nature of Tat or Ishvara is being unfolded in these second 6 chapters. And we'll see how Lord Krishna then, what is the yoga? Knowing Ishvara suggests that how to translate that knowledge into life, this is called bhakti. Call it karma yoga. So knowing the self as I am, then how to translate it becomes karma yoga. Knowing Ishvara, then how to translate it becomes bhakti yoga. It's yoga only. As we'll see, there's no difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga, but then the process of translating that knowledge of Ishvara into life is called bhakti or devotion. Because we are naturally devoted to Ishvara. Whatever we consider Ishvara, whatever we consider as the most important in our life, whatever we consider as the goal of our life, whatever we consider as the most important thing in our life, to that we are automatically devoted. And therefore, these six chapters will also talk of bhakti or devotion. And naturally, Lord Krishna will talk about bhakta, the devotee also. Because the discussion of bhakti, devotion, cannot be apart from the discussion of bhakta or a devotee. Thus we'll find these chapters talk about Ishvara, they talk about bhakti, the devotion, as bhakta, the devotee. These are then the subject matter of these six chapters and of the seventh chapter which we are studying. I am told that the first 10 verses have been already done, and I think we have to continue from the 11th verse. Looks like to many of you also that comes as a news. So what did Lord Krishna talk about in the first 10 verses, you know? How does Vedanta, how does Bhagavad Gita unfold the nature of Ishvara? If you look at the 7th verse, Lord Krishna says, Mattah paratram nanyat kinchirasti dhananjaya mai saramidam prothaṁ sutre manigaṇāyava. He dhananjaya, mattah paratram nanyat kinchirasti. There is nothing, no cause other than or superior to me. Lord Krishna says, there is no cause other than me. I am the cause of the creation. There is no other cause than me. I am the only cause. Now we know very well that there are two causes for creating anything. That is the nimitta karanam, the intelligent cause, and upadana karanam, the material cause. Like for creating a cloth, you have the cotton, which is the upadana, the material, and we are the weaver, who is the intelligent cause. So weaver takes that yarn and weaves the cloth out of that. So yarn becomes the material cause and the weaver becomes the intelligent cause. Material cause is called upadana karanam and intelligent cause is called the nimitta karanam. At least these two things are required. You may need other accessories also. In case of cloth, you will need also the loom and various other things you'll need. But at least these are needed. They are also called nimitta, by the way. The loom and other things are also included in the nimitta karana. But the nimitta karana or the intelligent cause, the nimitta karana that we mean is intelligent cause. The loom is not an intelligent cause, but the weaver is the intelligent cause. Thus, for any creation we require material cause as well as intelligent cause. The material cause, as a general rule, is inert, is jadam or inert, such as yarn, such as clay, such as gold. All of these are inert material. That is the material cause. And the intelligent cause, the creator, as a rule, is a conscious being, such as a pot maker, such as a weaver, such as a goldsmith, necessarily an intelligent being. That generally our experience is that the intelligent cause and the material cause are different from each other. Because the intelligent cause is a conscious being, material cause is an unconscious matter, and conscious being and unconscious matter are different from each other. This is what our experience is. So if Lord Krishna would say that, I am the cause of the creation, the Lord is necessarily an intelligent, conscious entity, and therefore we would think that He is the creator, He is the nimitta karan, the intelligent cause, because Lord represents the, He is the conscious being. In which case, the material cause, the matter would be different, because material cause is inert. So if Ishvara is only the principle of consciousness, and what we call matter is something different, something that stands apart from consciousness, and there will be two causes, then Lord Krishna cannot say that I am the only cause. Then it will be proper for Lord Krishna to say that I am the creator of the universe, I am the intelligent cause of the universe, and the other one, namely the matter, the material cause, is separate from me. But what does Lord Krishna say? Mattah parataram kinchid nanyadasti dhananjaya. He dhananjaya, there is no cause other than me. Meaning that not only I am the intelligent cause, I am also the material cause. So this is the uniqueness of Vedanta, where Ishvara is presented both as the nimitta karanam as well as upadana karanam, as the creator as well as the creation. As the maker, in Puja Swami's words, He is both the maker as well as the material. This is unique only to Vedas, to Vedanta, because no other tradition that we know of reveals Ishvara in this manner. Most traditions describe Ishvara as a maker, as a creator, who stands apart from creation. Here, however, we are told that He is the only cause. He is not only the maker, He is also the material. And what does it mean? What else is there in the universe? The universe consists of the maker and the material. If maker and material are one, then there is no other entity left, and that accounts for everything. The maker accounts for all the conscious beings, and the material accounts for all the inert things, and therefore, maker and material, nimitta and upadana, account for everything. Well, Lord Krishna says, I am the only cause, I am the maker as well as material, I am the intelligence, I am the consciousness as well as unconscious matter, I am the sentient as well as insentient. That means I am everything, there is none other than me, I am one without a second. Lord Krishna says, I am the only one, there is nothing other than me. That's a very big thing. If it really sinks into our minds, we say that is where it is sinking. Our perception has to change. Then alone, you know, the teaching has affected us. Then it brings about a change in perception. Knowing this in principle, knowing this as a theory is one thing, or it's knowing this, you know, it's very intellectually satisfying and stimulating, but it should in fact enter into our own thought process that whatever there is Ishvara. As Pujya Swamiji would say, not only do we worship one Ishvara, we worship only Ishvara. That's a very big thing. Ishvara is always worshipped. If everything is Ishvara, everything becomes worshipped, everything becomes worshipful. That means, whatever I do then would become only nothing but worship. Svakarmanatam abhyarthya siddhim vindati manavaha. So that is why they prescribe nididhyasanam. The Vedantic meditation is called nididhyasanam. What is nididhyasanam? Nididhyasanam is to gain an abidance in that perception. So we, having understood this, it's very clear that Ishvara is both the maker as well as the material. He is all there is, sentient, insentient, self, non-self, whatever there is Ishvara. And to explain that, Lord Krishna talked about his twofold prakriti, a twofold nature. In the fourth and fifth verses, this is what Lord Krishna said. Bhumirapo nanovayuhu khammano buddhirevacha ahankaritiyam me bhinna prakriti ashtadha. Earth, water, fire, air, space. That's the five elements. Mind, intellect and ego. This is my prakriti divided in an eightfold way. So Lord Krishna says, this is my prakriti. This is my manifestation. This is my eightfold manifestation in the material world. Apareya mitasthanyam prakritim vidyame param jiva hutam mahabaho yedam dharyate jagat. This is my lower prakriti. So that statement goes the previous verse, understand. Somewhat unusual, you know, but here the fourth verse overflows in the fifth verse. Aparayam. This is my lower prakriti. Then why should Lord Krishna have included in the fifth verse? Because to contrast it with tvanyam prakritim vidyame param, whereas other than this, please understand my para prakriti, my higher nature. Jiva bhutam, which is the nature of jiva or the conscious being. So Lord Krishna says twofold prakriti, twofold power, twofold manifestations there are. One is of nature of the five elements, mind, intellect and ego, which is the inert matter. The five elements represent the gross inert matter, and the mind, intellect and ego represent the subtle body or the subtle expression of inert matter. So gross body and subtle body, both of these are the products of the five elements. Lord Krishna says that this is my manifestation. Aparayam itas aparayam, this is the apara, this is the inferior one. Itas tvanyam, other than this, prakritim vidyame param, know that it is my para prakriti, my superior prakriti, which is different from this. Jiva bhutam, of the nature of jiva, the conscious being. The consciousness. That is my second prakriti. So this material world, and this, you can call it matter and spirit if you want to use those words, or self and non-self. Why do I use the word spirit? Because there is the word spiritual, that is why. And there is material, that's why. The word spiritual is a very common word. It comes from the word spirit, which is the conscious being of the self. So what Lord Krishna is saying is, both the material as well as spiritual manifestations are mine. That's all there is. That is how Lord Krishna says, mattah paratam nanyat, there is nothing other than me, because these two are myself, these two are my manifestations. Etadyonini bhutani sarvani iti upadharaya. Hey Arjuna, upadharaya. So may you please understand, may you please behold or understand this. Sarvani bhutani etadyonini, all the beings, all the beings sentient and insentient are the products of these two prakriti, para-prakriti and apara-prakriti, matter and consciousness. The combination of the two is the cause of the entire creation. So wherever you look in any name and form, you'll find these two, the lower prakriti and the higher prakriti. That you know very well, like this flower has these five aspects. The flower is, the flower shines, and the flower is dear. And it is called flower, it is a name and a form. Asti, Bharati, Priyam, Rupa and Nama. These are the five aspects of every name and form, or every object, every entity. Sentient or insentient, good or bad, whatever they in the creation is characterized by consisting of this five. It is, it shines, it is dear, it is a name, it is a form. Of this five, the Asti, Bhati, Priyam, these three are common to all the names and forms. And what distinguishes one object from the other are the names and forms. So name and form is what we call the apara prakriti, the matter, the inferior prakriti. The asti, bhadi, priyam reflected in that is called the para prakriti or the superior prakriti. Edat dyonini bhutani sarvaneti upadharaya. Here Arjuna, we understand that whatever in the creation is made up of this twofold prakriti, the name and form on one hand and asti, bhadi, priyam on the other hand, then whatever is a union of these two. Asti, bhadi, priyam alone is not enough because it is formless, it is without any distinction or qualification, therefore it cannot become an object of vyavahara or interaction. No nama rupa alone is enough because it is inert. Therefore, it is a union of these two that makes up every object in this world. Lord Krishna doesn't bother what object is, whatever there is in the world. It's all inclusive. Rama also is there and Ravana also is included. Krishna also and Kamsa, all of these are included in this lower and upper prakriti. Aham Krishnasya jagataha prabhavaha pralayastatha. On account of the fact that this is my twofold power, twofold prakriti of the nature, and that the universe is made up of these two, therefore I am the creator, I am the sustainer, I am the dissolver, I am the very source, I am the very sustainer, and I am the one in which everything resolves. Everything emerges from me, everything is sustained by me, everything merges back into me. And therefore, all there is myself. So before making the statement in the seventh verse, Mattah parataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya, there is nothing other than me, Lord Krishna explained how that is so. How whatever there is nothing but myself. I am ekaha advidyaha, one without a second, and the whole universe is nothing but manifestation of myself. Therefore Lord Krishna said in the second line of the seventh verse, Mayi sarvidam prutam sutre manigana. All this is woven, or has this being in me, like a cluster of beads in a string. Like the beads being strung in a string, so also the universe of names and forms is all strung in me. Or like a thread which pervades the cloth, so also I am the thread that pervades the cloth of the entire universe. Or like a string that supports all the beads, I am the string that supports the beads of all the names and forms. So there are two examples here. Mayi saravidam protam and sutre mani ganaiva can looked upon as two different illustrations. Because sutre mani ganaha prota, even if somebody wants to write, grammatically speaking. So idam saram protam, sutre mani ganaha prota, but then the mani, the cluster of beads are not actually woven. Prota means woven. So the cluster of beads are not woven into a thread. You know? They are strung into a thread. Whereas the cloth is woven into the thread. So therefore we can say that just as a cloth which is woven to the thread is pervaded by the thread, so also the universe is woven by the thread of Ishvara. Ishvara is the very thread of which this whole universe is made. Just as there can be a big cloth in which you may make an embroidery. In that embroidery, there can be different kinds of patterns. You may have, in fact, made a very beautiful embroidery in which you may show various things. Like children draw, they draw a garden, and they draw the hills, and the sun is rising, and then there are a few trees, and then there is water, and then there are a few deers and some animals, and there are a few human beings, and there are birds flying, and there are clouds. And you know, suppose an embroidery like this, that's a typical thing. The whole that embroidery, there's only one thread that makes up the entire embroidery. Even though at the first sight the trees appear to be different from the hills, and the hills appear different from the sun, which is different from the birds, again different from the water, different from the animals, different from the human beings, all of these entities appear to be different from each other. Some of them are sentient, others are insentient. The hills are insentient, the birds are sentient entities. And still, the fact is that all of them are woven by one thread. Pull the thread, then one by one, then little by little, this whole thing will disappear. If an older sister is making this embroidery, has left it incomplete, and a younger brother comes crawling, you know, and then finds the thread hanging and starts pulling. Then slowly but surely, the hills will go, and the trees also will go, and the sun will go, and the birds will go, and then the water lake will go, and the human, all of them will disappear. So where do they disappear? They disappear where they came from. They all emerged from the thread. They were all sustained by the thread, they all merged back into thread. So thread is a self of the entire universe, is Atma, the self of the whole universe. Other example is how the beads are strung into a string. How the string holds all the beads. It provides a harmony, which is what we call a necklace. The beads supports or sustains all the thread supports or sustains all the beads. And without the thread, the beads will scatter. There'll be no harmony, there'll be no order at all. And therefore that which provides the harmony, that which provides the order, that is a nimitta karam, the intelligent cause, that also is Ishvara. So thus by these two examples we can say how Protam, the Lord, is pervading the entire universe like the thread is pervaded in embroidery. He is the upadana karanam, the material cause which pervades the effect. He is also like the thread that sustains all the beads, is the sustaining, and like the nimit karanam that provides the harmony or the order into the whole universe. He is the nimitta karanam as well as upadana karanam. Lord Krishna says that there is no cause other than me. There is nothing other than me. Why only cause? Mattah paratram nanyat kinchidasti dhan. There is nothing other than me. All there is myself. So this is the perception of Ishvara that Vedanta provides. The Lord Krishna gives us yoga also. Now how to translate this perception into our life? That's my worship. How do you worship? How do you worship Ishvara? So Lord Krishna says, how I pervade everything. Rasoham apsa kaunteya pravasmi shashi suryayoho Prava sarvedeshu shabdakhe paurushandrashu. Here Arjuna, you can meditate upon me in this way. So this perception now can be utilized by us for meditation. Rasoham apsu kaunteya. He kaunteya, I am the rasa. I am the taste in water. The taste that you like. If you like sweet taste, that's what Ishvara is. If you like sour taste, that's what Ishvara is. Like pungent, like bitter, whatever taste you like. Lord Krishna said, the rasa, the very taste, that source of joy in that I am. So you can meditate on Ishvara. That in ice cream he is so and so, in kulfi is that and that, in rasgulla is like this, and in samosa is that, and pulao is something else. Because he pervades everything. The taste he is. All the different tastes are his vibhutis. He is a basic rasa. And then, whether it is madhura, tikta, you know, whatever different rasas are there, whether it is sweet or sour or pungent or bitter, all these are the vibhuti, the manifestation of Lord of the nature of rasa, who pervades this water. So water is the embroidery which is pervaded by the thread of rasa, which is Ishvara. So you can meditate. You can in fact meditate while eating your food also. So when you're eating the food and enjoying the taste, then you can say, this is Ishvara. Ishvara in the form of this taste in this particular food, which is true. That requires certain amount of focus of a mind, because while eating, generally we do a lot of talking and chatting, and we don't, you know, very often what we are eating or when the food gets over. But that occasion also can be made the occasion of the meditation. Asoham apsukandeya prabhasmi shashi suryayoho. In the sun and moon, I am the light in the sun and moon. And then stars and lightning, wherever the light is, I am. So as light, I manifest as sun, as moon, as stars, as lightning, as fire. So you can meditate on sun. Who is Ishvara? Ishvara is very light in the sun. In fact, Ishvara is light, manifests as sun. You cannot separate the sun and light really, but then Ishvara, that is the principle of light, manifests as sun, manifests as moon, manifests as fire, etc. This is what meditation we are given. To meditate upon the all-pervading Lord. Pranavaha sarvedeshu. In all the Vedas, I am Pranava, I am Omkara. Shabdah ke. In the space, I am the sound. Paurusham drushu. I am the strength in the human beings. Punyogandah prasivyam cha. And I'm the sweet fragrance in the earth. Like with the first rain, the kind of fragrance that comes from the earth, the sweet fragrance. In fact, all fragrance belongs to earth anyway. So, whatever kind of fragrance is there, fragrance is the nature of earth. So you can meditate on that. If you like a certain fragrance, like, you know, that you can meditate, this is Ishvara. Which, that is true. But when you meditate on Ishvara, then the meditation of worship, there must be the sense of worshipfulness, with sense of devotion. It's not that it becomes an object of enjoyment, you are enjoying that particular fragrance and this is Ishvara. Ishvara is something to worship and not something, it's not bhogya. It's not a bhogya vishaya. It's not an object of my sense gratification. It is the object of my worship. Tejas chasmi bhavasau, I am the heat or brilliance in the fire. Jivanam sarabhuteshu, I am the very life in all the beings. Tapas chasmi tapasvishu, I am the austerities in the people who are austere. Bijammam sarabhutanam viddhi partha sanatanam. He partha, I am the eternal seed in all the beings. I am the eternal cause in all the beings. Buddhi, buddhimatam asmi. I am the intellect of the intelligent. Tejaha Tejasvinamaham. I am the brilliance in the brilliant. All this is very practical also. Buddhi Buddhimatamasmi. I am the intelligence of the intelligent. I am an intelligent being. The intelligence that is in me is Ishvara. And other intelligent beings are also there. The intelligence in them also is Ishvara. In that case, there will be no need for any jealousy or any comparison. Usually I feel jealous of someone who is more intelligent than me. If I am proud of my intelligence, then I will be jealous of someone more intelligent than me. I can remind myself, that is Ishvara. Is Ishvara's manifestation. So, there are some names and forms who manifest him a little more brighter than others. And so, certain utensils are a little more polished and therefore they look more shining. Other a little less polished, less shining. But then it's the same thing. The shine of intelligence is Ishvara. The capacity to perform penance is Ishvara. The brilliance of the brilliant is Ishvara. So all of these are Lord Krishna now describes. Does not simply say that I am everything, but then tells us what all he is. So as Pujya Swamiji would say, not just glossing over that he is everything. Otherwise that statement is enough, that I am everything. Then why should Lord Krishna take so much trouble to individually describe? Can give one or two examples, just as Arjuna, I am the taste in water and fragrance in earth, I am everywhere. No. He takes every element. I am the light in the sun, heat in fire, taste in water, fragrance in earth, sound in space. You can the touch in the air. Takes every element. Takes whatever we experience or interact with in the day-to-day life. Because yajna dana tapah karma, because tapascharya is something that is done everybody by everybody, as what we call the nitya karma, or the daily duty. Therefore, tapascharasmi tapasvinam. See, the Vedas are studied, therefore, buddhir buddhimatamasmi. So in these verses, Lord Krishna is describing how he is all-pervasive. And is describing a few of his glories, and with the help of which we can meditate upon Ishvara. And make that knowledge our knowledge. The idea is that Ishvara is everything, can become our knowledge in this manner, but really meditating, meaning spending time with this, making ourselves see this fact. Not simply describing, seeing this fact that yes, this is Ishvara. Looking at sun and moon, that is Ishvara. Fire, this is Ishvara. Earth, this is Ishvara. And Lord Krishna continues, we'll continue with the 11th verse in the next session. We come back here at 11:35.